Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Still a lot of hunting going on. And fishing, too. Hey, we're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of December 16th and 17th. Various permit deer seasons are going on. General small game season is still going on between here and there. And they still have, after today, there's still five more stocking days for the ringnecks and the bobwhites. Now, stripers have hit the Cape May area, Ocean City South, but they're out by that three-mile line. Please be careful. Still some bass up north around various sizes, smaller fish now. Signals pretty much the end of the run and the tog bite. Ooh, that blackfish, man, they are, they're hot and they're not. Joining us a little later on in the program is Captain Bob Cope, Fullhead Sport Fishing there out of the Great Utchins Marina in Cape May County. Talking some late season winter tog tactics, man. It can be frustrating, or it can be hotter than all get out. Hey, back to the stocking now. You have, after today, you have five more stocking days for the 19th rather, and the 21st. These are some of our favorite areas. We're talking pheasants first. These are for both days. Numbers are the same for both stocking days. Kyers Mills, 200. Howardsville, 50. Manahawkin, 50. Medford, 80. Stafford Forge, the Forge, 160. Dix in the south area is Dix, 130. Glassboro, 100. Hyzerville, 50. Mad Horse, 90. Millville, 340. Nantunxet, 110. Love the Tunxet down here on the bay. Port Republic, 50. Underrated little spot there. Just the other day on the parkway, not one but two coppers dead on the shoulder. I was tempted to pull over, man, do the quick grab. But my luck, there'd be a trooper right behind me. Tuckahoe, 110, and Winslow, 144. The bobwhites, 260 for the 19th, 400 for the 21st on Greenwood. Peasley, 260 on the 19th, and again, 400 for the 21st. I tell you, there's some late-season opportunities here. The best part about chasing the pheasants and the bobs now, for the most part, hunting pressure has been cut by at least two-thirds, so it's more or less of a quality experience going on. But hey, coming up in our next segment, we're talking about deer. Winter bow season is going to be happening pretty soon. Still 2 weeks, a little tired of it. You want a winter bow hunt. Now's the time to get out. Check some new areas. Check some. Yeah, do some scouting. Still plenty of deer, man. They still survive. Mark Kroniak, member of the New Jersey Bow Hunters Hall of Fame, will be talking some winter bow tactics next couple of segments. So grab that cup, grab that Rebel. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Hey, man, was it in five more days, six more days? A little more daylight hanging around. The march to spring will be underway. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Harry Hurley for Ambient Comfort Heating and Cooling Professionals. Rising energy costs continue to be one of the top news stories. We might disagree about the best solution, but we still need to keep our homes and our families comfortable. If you suspect your heating system needs repair, call my friends at Ambient Comfort Heating and Cooling and save $50 off any repair this month. If your system is making louder sounds, if you notice unusual cycling, or if your system is over 10 years old, it may need maintenance to keep running safely and at maximum efficiency. Ambient Comfort skilled technicians are prepared to get you through the winter, regardless of who originally installed your system. Don't be left out in the cold. When comfort matters, choose who I choose. Visit AmbientComfortNJ.com. That's AmbientComfortNJ.com. Or call 609-568-0955. That's 609-568-0955 and save $50 off your repair. Tell them Harry Hurley sent you.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Okay, like I said earlier, we have five more stocking days after today. So the pheasant, although the seasons are going to extend into, I think quail ends January 31st and ringnecks end February, 16th, 17th, somewhere in there. So the opportunities are still going to be out there. Permit season is winding down. Again, winter bow, as Rambo said, it's never over, man. Winter bow season is going to kick off in a couple of weeks, January 1st, and run through the 31st. No doubt the most challenging hunting of the year. Not so much weather anymore with the blinds and the little buddy heaters and all that good stuff. And the body heater suits when you're up there in the stand. I love you, DeMarie, way up there. Hey, baby, have a parachute! What's going on? But the numbers, deer numbers have been pruned down, but yet there's always, always, always deer out there. I'll get some winter bow hunting tactics down from one of the finest bow hunters that we know in the parallel universe of Rack and Fin Radio. It's Mark Kroniak. Mark is an official Pope and Young and Boone and Crockett's scorer. He's also a lifetime member of the United Bow Hunters of New Jersey and a member of the New Jersey Bow Hunters Hall of Fame, holder of three former bow fishing records. Guy is amazing, just an all-around share-the-knowledge type of individual. Have him on the line right now. Let's talk some winter bow, maybe do's and don'ts, some little tactics here and there, where to look, where not to go, what to avoid, how to score. Yes, there's still not, I'm not going to say plenty of you on private land, maybe, antlers out there for this December season. Now, the shed, I don't know, I've seen deer as late with antlers as late as Valentine's Day going into the last week in February. Someone sent me a photo, verified, whatever, a couple of years ago. First week in March, guys, big boy still had his rack out there in Milmay, Mays Landing area. So, Mark, I have you on the line right now. One, thanks for joining us. Short notice. It's a couple of weeks away. Time to sort of prepare already because, again, deer season, it's never over. It's a 12-month thing. Hey, thanks for joining us. How you doing, brother?
I'm well. Thank you, Tom. Good morning. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, always a pleasure, Mark. Like I said, as we discussed earlier on the phone, that winter bow tactics, it can be an entirely different ballgame. You can stick to some basics. Things have changed. Habitat has changed. Food sources have changed. All the foliage is pretty much down, but you do have, especially down here in South Jersey, these god-awful thickets and stuff. Now, you get to hunt statewide. Would you agree this is the most challenging season of all the seasons out there for the whitetails?
Yeah, you know how it is. The deer are on edge. They've been blasted and chased around for months by now, and now they're on edge pretty much. So, yeah, it is challenging, yeah.
But, Mark, there's always the bucks that survive, and be it a spike or be it a rack or what they say, you know, in the world on TV, especially a shooter. And now, Mark, tactics, especially like public land or private land, deer are going to behave the way deer do. Mark, do you find it more weather-driven or food-driven? Getting a track on these whitetails in January, what's one of your main veins?
Food is a big key factor, you know, and there's lesser food available, acorns, whatever. So if you can find feed, you're going to find the deer, and they're going to be more prone to come into it. And that includes, you know, not natural food baiting kind of things. You can put some corn out, it's going to be even more productive. You know, there was a time where I only baited during the winter season. I wouldn't bait during the year.
Joe us online is Mark Kroniak, Pope and Young, and Boone and Crockett score, a lifetime member of UBNJ, and also New Jersey Bowhunters Hall of Fame. Man, that's I don't want to first induct these. Len Cardinale, God bless him, gave me my from Butts and Bows in Belleville up there in North Jersey on Washington Avenue, right next to Branchbrook Park and Nonita's Restaurant in the Park, which is now all about catering, but that's another story. But, Mark, again, locating food sources. Now, I said acorns. I mean, I've seen – Mark, it's really wild. We're out there. We'll have some corn out or sugar beets, what have you. And we'll see deer nibble on that, but then go to brush, go to like buds or something like that. In other words, going to more natural. Picking areas out where, if you're going to search for food, are you looking at swamp, lowlands, whereabouts? What are we looking for?
I mean, I guess it depends on where you live. You got some areas that have natural crops that are planted, and there's still some available, you know. Farmers will sometimes leave beans, a little bit of beans standing through the winter for the deer, or corn standing for deer, and you know, areas like that, or just natural browse that they eat, you know, in the woodland itself, you know.
Mark, deer movement as it pertains to, again, now, believe it or not, listeners, again, as of what, in a couple of days, days are going to start to get, okay, slow, a little more light. In January, deer movement, I mean, moon phases, weather, patterns that affect them where you, I mean, are they easier in the winter, again, because, okay, man, there's not much food, they're going to be here or whatever, easier to get a pattern on, or is that, you know, that go out the window with, you know, January storms or increased light, what have you?
For bucks especially, it's probably easier because they're past the rut, they're more on a pattern. I mean, not that they're still not rutting, actually. So I think December and January is some of the best rutting action you can have.
Whoa. Let's get into the tertiary rut, secondary rut. Wow, into January, huh?
Yeah, sure. Some of my biggest bucks have killed in December, January, absolutely while they were rutting, you know.
Wow. You know, Mark Singer, sometimes in September I'll see fawns with spots. So are those early September? So those are offspring of the secondary or tertiary rut, correct?
Yeah, sure. So so now, of course, you know who Lenny LaRue is.
Oh, Lenny LaRue, you up there in Blairstown.
He's written several books, and one of them including Deer of North America. That's probably one of the best non-hunting books that a hunter can own, because it gives you so much biological information on the deer. And it's according to him, 6-month-old does will come into heat in January. So you have September, October, and November ruts that are the mature does, 30 days apart. Mm-hmm. And then in December, healthy fawns will come into, January, healthy fawns will come into rut. And there's so fewer does coming into heat later in that year that all, you know, the majority of the bucks are on that doe. So you can really have some intense rutting action later in the year.
Wow, and primarily listed to the dominant bucks, or, well, you know, spikes, forks, just like teenagers, everything get involved?
Whoever wants them, you know.
Well, so their behavior, that can be like when you see a deer walking down the street in November, down the street in a suburban, you know, suburban town, or they get that careless, that crazy?
It'll be as intense just in this. You won't have as many bucks running in different directions, but if you do have a hot doe, there'll probably be more bucks on her because of the fact that there's so fewer does that are in heat at the time.
Okay, joining us on the Rock and Pin line right now is New Jersey Bowhunters Hall of Fame member Mark Kroniak, also a Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young scorer and lifetime member of the United Bowhunters of New Jersey. Great organization. Well, Mark, will they be working old scrapes or making new scrapes? What's the dealio?
Scrapes will be opening still. You know, like you'll see in November, the scrapes will slow down a little bit, you know, because the bucks are on the does, and now they're starting to open up again as of right now or even a week ago. Scrapes are starting to get worked again because of, bucks are out looking for does again. There's not as many available does, so they're just trying to pick some up.
Well, Mark, let me run this by you then. So with fewer does, fewer babes out there, lack of babies, as we say, will they be even more attuned to sense, to estrus sense? You know, misting as you're going into your stand and stuff? Will they respond quicker?
Absolutely.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, sure.
Dominant bucks now, are they going to be just keyed on it, or will they be willing to mix it up with any challengers? Are the younger guys just going to say, man, even at this late stage of the game, I'm not going to mess? What have you seen out there?
I don't think the rut is going to be as intense and craziness that you have in November. But when you do find a hot doe, you know, it's going to be some exciting, intense hunting. They're not going to be running through the streets and on lawn, but you won't. You can have some really, really good rutting action later in the year.
Okay, listen, we're talking winter bow tactics. We're getting some more of it in the next segment with Mark Kroniak. Grab that cup, grab that rebel. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. It's never over. Never over. Be right back.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station. Fox on Tech.
Are we scared of the robots yet? Elon Musk's Tesla has been experimenting with humanoid robotics, and just this week it's revealed a video of its second generation of Optimus. It looks like a person. It kind of walks like a person. It can do squats like a fit person. Why? It has feet shaped like a human and can sense how much weight it needs to put down when walking. That means its walking speed is 30% faster than the previous Optimus robot. It can move its fingers, which can also sense what it's touching and can gently handle it. In the video, it picks up an egg with one hand and transfers it to the other hand before placing the egg gingerly in a bowl. Tesla says Optimus Gen 2 is a prototype. You won't be able to buy one even if you could swing it. But Musk has previously stated a desire for humanoid robots to take on labor tasks humans would rather not do. With Fox on Tech, I'm Eben Brown, Fox News.
At Ocean First Bank, our first thought is you. We put you first in all we do.
Community banking for a century. We treat you like your family. Whatever you need, whatever your dream, let's make it a reality. Ocean First Bank. Putting you first.
When your dream is building a new home, we offer mortgage options designed with your convenience in mind. Like combining your construction and permanent loan into just one closing. Saving you time for the really fun stuff, like planning that housewarming party.
Whatever you need, whatever you dream, let's make it a reality. Ocean First Bank. Putting you first.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Opportunity Lender.
Confin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Here we go. Look out below. Back inside Rack and Fin Raiders. Me, Tom P. Week of December 16th and 17th. We're talking winter boat tactics. 2 weeks. The season's going to open January 1st and run through January 31st. Half hour before sunrise, a half hour after sunset. On the line right now is very special guest Mark Kroniak, Boone and Crockett, and Pope and Young, official score member, life member UBNJ, and member of the New Jersey Bow Hunters Hall of Fame. Some winter boat tactics. Now, Mark, now insofar as tactics, there's stands. Yeah, you can do I guess they call it still hunting, the slow walk. You had mentioned something that you do successfully with some other hunters, driving, during bow hunting driving. That was pretty unique. I've never, I know some guys that, two or three moving around, but you actually have successful driving techniques for deer, winter bow?
Yeah, sure. Even during the regular season as well, extended season and early season, whatever. But usually we do it during winter bow for whatever reason, because it's colder and you're moving. And you could do it with anyone from 2 to 22 guys, and depending on the size of the woodlot. So
again, the other two listeners, a lot of foliage is down for the most part. You have, except, again, yeah, the South Jersey and these curtains of bulbriars. One time I was driving to a club for a week. I went through a pair of Carhartts pretty much. It looked like I got and my face was all ripped up. But Mark, driving now, is it down here, for example, is it the yo buck, the screaming, or slow, methodical drives? Explain these drives.
So, the biggest thing to a drive is not letting the deer know they're being driven naturally. If they know that someone's going to be down there waiting for them in that area you're pushing them to, they're going to avoid it. And then doing it a couple of times in prior, you get to learn where the deer are going to run through. So, again, you can set up on a small woodlot anywhere from 5 to 10 acres in size or even less, and you just bump the deer slowly from one corner to another. Or you can do it. We do it up in North Jersey, up in Sussex County, in the Delaware Water Gap area. Mm-hmm. And we would do that with 20 guys. A good friend of mine, Jim Ellis, who you may know from Butts and Bows days as well. He would get people coming down from New Hampshire and Vermont, and we would have 30, 40 guys, and we would just do these drives. And for miles, they would do it too. Everybody would set up on a line with a compass, and they would walk that line towards people set up on logging roads. And they did fairly well.
Now, Mark, we're talking like a slow, methodical pace, so to speak, right? You don't want these deer flying ass, through the woods, correct?
100%. You're just making them move slowly. You don't want them running. And setting up where the stander sets is, pretty important as well. You want to set up in an area where the deer isn't going to blow through, so it's going to have a little bit of cover. But it's going to have a break where a deer has to stop before he gets through that break, like a little bit of a dip. So he may stop right before that dip, and that's kind of where you want to be set up. And again, the more you do those drives, the more you learn where the deer are going to, they're going to break rules naturally and do things that are... aren't 100% of the time.
He said that for my benefit, people. Oh, they're going to be here. They're going to be here. Tom P., where were the deer? I don't know, man. Well, Mark, the importance, again, is knowing the topography. Scouting, whether it's a drive or whether it's an individual hunt, you have to, again, getting to a new area. And that's why, listeners, now 2 weeks ahead of time, if you want to try a new area, if you believe it's shot out, which it never really is, now's the time to be doing it, correct?
Yeah, sure. The woods are so much more open. there's so much more to see now. It's easier to see because of the openness of the woods, and you can learn a lot more, yeah.
So, Mark, during these drives, I find this intriguing, people, and I've never seen it with the bows before. During these drives, I mean, the deer, they're hit. Are they, again, not for lack of better, for lack of better, easy to recover, but are they, they get a blow through, you get a shot, I mean, recoverable? Is it going to be a long track or what?
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, a lot of times, again, you're not getting them to the point where they're spooked and running off hard or running down to the sitter hard.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of walking a little ways to stay ahead. I mean, sometimes they'll run, but they're just kind of lobbing ahead of the driver, you know? So when they get shot, it's no different from when they're chasing a doe or just walking through the woods to, you know, naturally, they're just moving through and, you know, and again, all depends on the hit, you know, if you hit them right.
Mark, the success, success that I've had, but just observing deer, bottomlands to me seem to be the most productive insofar as either attracting deer or holding deer during the winter. You got a spring seep or a little brook or something like that, like a white cedar swamp down where we hunt out by Milmay. Those areas pretty much prime?
You know, I don't have enough familiarity with those areas, so I couldn't even respond to that.
The bottom lands I've seen, listen, again, even up North Jersey along the Little Flapper, for example, right there.
Those little
spots. Yep. And Mark, another thing too that I learned over the years, again, Lenny Carnell and a bunch of bow hunters who've tutored me, much would say slapping their heads while I'm even bothering that. Don't overlook even the smallest patch, because a big deer could hide, and I swear a meadow mouse can get claustrophobic in some of this cover where we've seen deer come out like a genie.
Oh, yeah. I'll get into a little patch of thick cover behind some homes or a mall or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it from above, you wonder if anything could be in there, and then you'd be surprised. You know, when you look at it from an aerial photo, you see how small it actually is. But,
right.
You know. If they're in there, the deer don't know how small it is. They just know that they're undisturbed. So, you know.
And that's it. Yeah, I've seen some monster deer taken now legally, you know, with the 150, whatever. But again, which the UBNJ was responsible for. Legally within, like in between, say, a condo unit and a mall.
Yeah,
sure. We have a 100-yard stretch of woods or 150-yard stretch of woods. Well, we're and right in there. It's like they believe they're immune. Unfortunately, not all the time, are they?
Yeah, welcome to New Jersey, right?
Yeah, Mark, speaking of which, you mentioned guys from New England, Massachusetts, whatever, New Hampshire, whatever, coming down. I've run into them many a time over the decades, and to a person, they say, do you realize, when it comes to the deer hunting, especially, I know with the bears, too, do you realize what you have here? People don't understand how the quality of deer hunting we have in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah, we have a great opportunity and a lengthy, lengthy season for bow hunters, especially. You know, you can essentially hunt in my unit from early September to mid-February every day.
And that's it. Listen, it's not for lack of opportunity. Now, go to the Fish and Wildlife Digest or njfishandwildlife.com. Check your regulations set, because the bag limits will vary for winter bow, according to the DMZ that you're in, as per the regulation set. And if you need to stock up with venison, Mark, that now could be a good time, especially in some of these zones like DMZ 7 or 8, whatever, unlimited antlerless or what have you.
Yeah, you know, I'm in zone 50. It's the same thing. We can essentially shoot, you know, if you wanted to, 500 deer a year, you know. My theory always was that the state needs to work on, and I don't know if you want to get into this now, but smaller units, smaller zones, because there's parts of zone 50 where you can shoot, you know, as many deer as you want, but then there's other parts where there's a lot less deer, and they're encompassing the same rule set into parts of zone 50 where they don't have the same.
Good point. I wonder if that was brought up during the recent deer forums. Well, Mark, we're up against a hard break. I know you have a very tight schedule, but back to the UBNJ, incredible group. I belong to it for decades, responsible for, again, some of the great bow hunting opportunities we have here within the confines of the Garden State. I still get flabbergasted. I say, you know, I can do more, Blizzards. I realize that. But I cut my check every year, send it in. My lovely Dee Marie cuts a check every year, sends it in. But honestly, we're talking, what, 40,000, approximately 40,000 bow hunters in New Jersey, all enjoying the fruits of the UBNJ's labor and other groups, you know, New Jersey Outdoor Alliance type thing, and yet refuse to join or just shrug their shoulders out, who cares, you know, I'm just going to go bow hunting. What do you say to that? That gets me pissed off.
It's embarrassing. It really is. And it's nationwide, too. It's like every state organization should be belonged to by every bow hunter in the state, in my opinion. You know, if you have bow hunted a Sunday in New Jersey, if you've taken advantage of the fact that archery now has a smaller safety zone, the UBNJ is responsible for that. They got that legislation passed. They're the ones who did it. And for that reason alone, never mind the fact that they're fighting to protect bow hunting, but for that reason alone that they allowed, you know, got you to be able to bow hunt on Sundays, everybody should be a member. And we're less than 10% of the bow hunters being members, you know. So
that's embarrassing.
It really, really is. It's kind of sad. It just shows like an apathy towards...
Exactly. You know, you get I'm guilty of this. Look, I'm raising my hand here in the studio. I'm guilty of this myself. But it's not as if the UBNJ isn't out there promoting and doing events and getting youngsters involved and involved in tournament shooting and the whole bit. I mean, they're trying. The organization is trying. Same with the Federation and same thing with the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance. But it's just, again, Mark, the apathy, and I can't explain it. I just sort of shrug.
Yep.
Somebody else will take care of it. How's that? You know, that's what I usually say. Somebody else will take care of it.
You know, it's everybody's thought. Yep, exactly.
Well, Mark, thanks for joining us. You have a kick-ass end of the Yule month and a new year. Maybe see you in the woods. Hey, let's get together for a winter bow hunt.
Sounds good.
Okay, now my lovely Dee Marie is going to say you better get some masking tape and tape my mouth shut. So, Mark, take care, man. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thanks much. See you in January. You got it, brother.
Join the UBNJ.
Yep. See you later, man. Great guy, Mark Kroniak. And I'll tell you, he had the state records for white and more car bow fishing. I mean, my, like 60, 70 pounds. Holy God. But, yeah, winter bow hunting opportunities. A couple of weeks. Get out here. Do some scouting now. It's a never-ending thing. I like it, but I give it, I don't know, the whole day thing, unless I'm in the heat of blinds. That's a tough cut. But you do have some of those moderate days. You do have some of those moderate days in January. We've been out there sometimes 50, 55 degrees, and the deer are moving. It's a challenge. The numbers are low, but as Mark said, there's always some racks out there. Okay, be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
People all over the Jersey Shore have found the easiest way to stay connected to South Jersey's talk station. It's the WPG Talk Radio app. Read free South Jersey news. Listen to your favorite talk shows. It's all just a tap away with the WPG Talk Radio app.
Powered by Smokers Haven. Smokers Haven has the finest selection of cigars. Stop in at one of their 5 locations and let them help you find the perfect cigar to pair with your life. SmokersHavenNJ.com.
Fox News, I'm Chris DeMeo. A jury has awarded $148 million in damages to 2 former Georgia election workers who sued Rudy Giuliani for defamation over lies he spread about them in 2020. One of the election workers is Shay Moss.
I spent 10 years as an election worker in Fulton County, Georgia. The lies Rudy Giuliani told about me and my mommy after the 2020 presidential election have changed our lives. And the past few years has been devastating.
Giuliani says he'll appeal. We now know the cause of the death of a beloved star on Friends.
54-year-old Matthew Perry died from acute effects of ketamine. It says he had been receiving ketamine infusion therapy for depression and anxiety.
Fox's Christina Coleman, Perry found in a hot tub in his home back in October. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Atlantic City Electric AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. A beautiful start to the weekend today, partly sunny skies with a high 56. Becoming cloudy tonight, we're going down to 41. Tomorrow's a cloudy day with some drizzle in the morning, followed by periods of rain in the afternoon and evening. The high tomorrow, 58. Rain will taper on Monday, cloudy skies otherwise, with a high 61. I'm AccuWeather forecaster Rose Tamburino on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
As I mentioned earlier, man, the bluefin bite, still some tuna getting whacked out up north. Striped bass on the wane, but still fish around. But the talk has been about the tog tube, tog, a.k.a. blackfish, hot then not. Red hot and then ice friggin' cold. It's been, again, as my next guest just said to me off the air, he says, Tommy P, that's what you call tog fishing. Join us online right now. Very special guest when we can get him. Always does a tremendous drum segment. Captain Bob Cope, Full Ahead Sport Fishing, based out of Cape May. I want to talk it's togging in general, but Cape May togging in particular can be, don't think of the Peninsula County as being a hotbed for tog activity launching out there, but there is some tremendous togs from that vector point. Captain Bob, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Tom, and how are you making out?
Lock, cocked, and ready to rock. I understand you have a super season. And listen, by the way, you're going to have to go to his website because I think he may have one date open between now and 2029. Maybe, right? God, between the sea bass, the tog, your giant fluke, the drumfish, it's been crazy. Bob, as I discussed with you, it's been, you call it typical. I don't really togfish that much. If we get out 6-7 times a year, a season, it's a lot, spring or whatever. But it's been, in your experience, has it been that hot then not?
It hasn't been the greatest years I've seen. It's been good. You got to work at it. But tog or tog, and that's what keeps people coming. One day, they chew their heads off. The next day, it's like there's nothing left in the world. It's very difficult to figure it out why it happens. Nothing changes. You know, it doesn't blow. You don't get any current. And then all of a sudden, you can't catch them. And then the next day, you go back to the same place, and they're chewing again.
The same place and same bait, and they'll bite, and then they won't bite, correct?
That's, yeah. It's like your wife. You can't figure it out. Forget it. Go fishing.
Vintage Bob Cope there. Well, Bob, as I said earlier, again, off the air, when you're getting to this time of year now, the water temperature is dropping. It's prime, I guess. But I noticed a few times I went out the Captain Cal 2 up there at a Bellman Road. I used to go out of just tradition. January 1st on the, was it Carolina Ann 3 at a Barnegat Light? Water temperature 43, 44, they would chew. Get down to 41, 40, and whoa, is it beyond scratchy. Is this now? Are you seeing prime time right now, temperature wise, in the Cape May waters?
Yeah, we still have water right around 50 degrees on Cape May Reef.
Whoa!
Yep, it's still, the water temperature's holding up 50. I think it was 51 the other day. I remember looking at it. It was like 51.5. Plenty warm enough for them fish yet. But you know, once it gets cool, we'll move off. We'll go to 20 fathoms, fish the deep water, and the water's still probably 50 degrees there on the bottom. You know, a lot of days we see 47, 48 on the top out there.
So you're gonna have prime togging into the new year month, correct? Predicated on the water temperature.
We did last year too in Cape May Reef. I mean, you know, the bigger fish seem the biggest of the bigger fish seem to move off, but there's still plenty to catch to keep there. You know, they don't go. They're pretty tolerant water temperature. They'll get off the beach like. They catch them around the inlet jetty, and once it gets below 50, it seems like it's over there. But I've caught them at 47 degrees on Cape May Reef before. Caught them, not just picked at them, but catch them. You know, they're ready to go, they'll be gone.
If you check Facebook on occasion, you see Cope's, he does it. Well, Cap, the Cape May Reef is the largest in the system, is it not?
I think it is.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of open area. It's got quite a bit. Actually, in my own opinion, there's too much stuff there now.
Whoa! That bucks the norm. Because I always hear there's never enough cover.
Oh, there's plenty. They've put rocks out there. A lot of guys, they're all over the place. Problem is, a lot more guys talk fish now, and the spot lock game has really changed it because now more guys that could never do it. So, and now these fish get spread. So there's fewer fish in a lot of places. I mean, it's not uncommon for me to make 6 drops a day now, 5 drops a day. You know, get 7 or 8 here, a couple here, nothing there, a bunch here. You know, but that's what's come down to. But you get them, you just got to go work at it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. My next question was about the spot lock. How it's, I mean, you still have to make them bite. They still have to be able to bite, but that spot lock is really tilted the odds towards the angler's favor, correct?
And that's definitely a love-hate relationship. I I hate them because I'm traditional two-anchor guy. Too big. My boat's too big to use a spot lock. But I can damn well assure you that if I could throw $12,000 or $14,000 out of it at it and have a spot lock that would hold my boat still, I'd be there. I have to admit, it's some of the days when you can't get the boat anchored, it's too calm and the boat doesn't want to sit tight. And, you know, instead of taking 10 minutes to pull two anchors, you pick up the trolling motor, go to the next place. You probably cover three or four more spots in a day.
Yeah. Well, but we were talking about, speaking with Captain Bob Cope, Full-Edge Sport Fishing. Bob, Utch's Marina, correct? In Cape May?
Yes, sir.
Freddie! Shout out to Freddie Utch! Ernie Utch the third. But, Bob, on the talk, on this structure, what preferred structure as the water's cool? Do they move? I know Tog Love tanks and quote them off the Ocean City Reef on the tanks. Do they move from one type of structure to the next as the water's temperatures drop?
No, they just move around. As you get further offshore, they're more on the wrecks because there's not as much bottom. But, like, Cape May's got subway cars. It's got a lot of rocks. Wildwood's filled with rocks, a couple wrecks. Cape May's probably got a dozen wrecks on it. Then you go down to 11, there's wrecks
Reef
there.
Reefside 11, yeah.
Subway cars and rock down there. They pretty much, they go where the bait is. They move around a lot, you know, just because there's so much structure for them. When you get them offshore and you get them on a rock, odds are good they're there. You know, they might not bite today, but they're there. They got to, you know, it's 10 miles to the next piece. They don't venture around that much. They kind of, like, live there.
Bob, talk about deeper water. Ever fish for tog on the deep water reef?
Oh, yeah, we fish deeper than that, too. Yep.
Whoa. I mean, is that later on in January?
Yeah, in January we fish. We're at usually between 100 and 130 feet of water we're fishing.
Whoa. Hey, man. That is a whole different ball game, huh?
That's a whole new game. Some guys just, it's tough. The really, really good guys that we get on the boat are good at it, and they catch them. It just doesn't matter. But if you're a guy that's used to fishing 50, 60 feet of water, it's a definite game changer when you get in that deep water. Sometimes it's very hard to negotiate what's going on.
Well, I want to get into that in the short time we have in the next segment. But right now, Cope, right now, are guys using jigs and rigs more than jigs? What's the dealio?
Depends on the day. We suffer from a lot of current down here from Delaware Bay. Even out on the Cape May Reef, we get the current. When you don't have a lot of current and you know what you're doing, the jig guys do very well. And it's always like an ounce and a half jig, predominantly the best. When you get heavier, my opinion is that the tog will not pick up the crab and drag it around as he will lighter jigs. But it can, the jigs can be deadly. I got some guys that can just light it up when they'll bite the jigs. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Bob, have you seen your experience with the Sharpies you get on Fullhead jig color make? Shout out to Frankie Mahalik. Those guys, I mean, just got a 16.5 pound or something like that. But, Bob, color make a difference? Shape measure? The changes are subtly different on these different jig manufacturers, Bob. But shape or color seem to make a difference, or is it about what's on that hook? Green crab, white leg, or what have you?
Paint, the shape, all of it's called marketing.
There we go. Bob was one of the best reps in the biz.
Guys will buy extra to have yellow and white and glow. Give me a jig with no paint on it and a hook, and it will work just as well.
He says
it's all marketing. It's marketing. It's all personal preference. Well, I like this one. You get comfortable with it. You have faith in it. You use it. I get that part. The plain jig with no paint will work just fine.
Coming from the captain. Okay, listeners, hang in. We have one more segment with Captain Bob Cope. Be right back. Rack and Finn Ritter talking Cape May togging. Bob, next segment. Let's talk some deep water stuff, okay?
All right.
Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station.
Pro.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Yeah, we're back inside. Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Wrapping up our final segment for this weekend. Saturday, September 16th. Sunday, December 17th. Cape May Tog and Captain Bob Cope. Full-Head Sport Fishing out of Utch's Marina. Ernie Utch, I'm sorry. I was thinking Freddie. I was thinking someone else. We got it down. Now, right now, listeners, it's a tog bite. It's hot knot, as Captain Cope explained. You got to, you know, get in there. One day, predicated on current, what have you. Water temperature is prime right now. Later on, New Year togging. As we know it, it can be a deep water game. Now, Bob, as you said, it's a entirely different situation when you're talking that deep, 100, 130 feet. Go on the game changer, man. What do we have?
Well, when you come with us and you fish in 100 in that deep water, most of the guys are looking for the fish. They're not looking to catch limits.
Right.
They want to catch the fish, but they're looking for the fish. And the tackle that everybody uses that's looking for the fish is nobody uses less than 65-pound braid, and they're tying probably 80-pound shocker on and using 80-pound leaders on their hooks. It's if you get that fish, you want to be able to get them out of the structure. And guys come out with 40-pound test line and a 30-pound shocker, and you get the good fish on, you break them off.
It's just right there.
Over. It's, you know, you're kind of over-tackled, but you're really not over-tackled. You're fishing, you know, 8, 10-ounce sinkers a lot of days with the current. You got to fish heavy. It's all about if you get that bite, you want to catch that fish. And that's, you know, all it takes is one 16, 17, 18-pound fish to come over the rail, and people get crazy.
Cap, let me ask you this. Your preference in braid and leader, and is it fluorocarbon or mono? What's the deal?
I use mono leader. I tie some of my hooks with fluorocarbon, some of them with regular mono. I don't think the togger that's sensitive to any of that. You know, you can get in the argument with abrasion resistance with the fluorocarbon, this and that other thing. But, you know, right now I'm using that X9 Berkeley braid. I have had good success with that.
Now, Bob, on your boat that you supply the tackle, what are you armed with? Rods and reels, brand, go.
All the rods are up. Penn slow pitch rods, the Battalion slow pitch rods, the medium heavy one. They all have Fathom star drag reels on them, and then the other set of rods has all the new Fathom 2 lever drags, the silver reels. It's in a like 10 size.
Mm-hmm. In that kind of depth. Again, you have the braid, you have the short mono, you know, whatever floral leader. Detecting the taps now, are they tog going to be like chomp, 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 or is it going to be that scratchy stuff that they're known for late in the year? And getting that, setting that and getting that up at 130 feet, Mary Mother of God.
Some guys are just like, they're just like, it's seconds to them. I mean, it's some days they just bite it, and a lot of days they just, we call it pushing them around, the scratch bite. They just push it around, push it around, push it around. And you stand there, sometimes it takes 4 or 5 minutes before he'll eat it. It's a game. You got to be a good doctor.
Wait. How long?
Sometimes it takes 4 or 5 minutes for him to get it and eat it. They'll push it around. Yeah, and they'll leave it alone. They'll come back. The hardest part of tog fishing is when you get the bite to do nothing at first.
That leaves me out.
If you swing at that first bite, you get to catch nada. Yep.
He said that for my benefit, too, as well. But, Bob, now, down because he see me out of it. He just looks at Dee Marie. She looks at they shake their heads. But there I am. There I am with my Doritos. I'm happy. But, Bob, again, a scratchy bite on a fish like that, when is swing now. When is that, like the third or fourth, fifth bump? What's the deal?
You'll eventually feel them put pressure on it. You'll feel the pressure. Sometimes you can watch the line in the water and you can see starting to swim away with it. Like you can see the line start to move. You know, the boat's anchored. You're not moving. If the line starts to go, he's swimming away with it, then hit him. But it's a very hard thing to explain. You just got to go do it and do it and do it and do it until you've called them every name in the book. And then you catch a few and then you start to catch them and then it changes. That's what makes this fishery so much fun because it's, you know, you're spending most of your day with a line in the water.
Yep.
And they don't just, it's not sea bass fishing. You don't just drop it down the bottom and catch them. You can fish. I watch some guys, you keep dropping it down and keep getting bites. But they're like, okay, guys, went through half a bushel of crabs. We killed three fish. When are we going to start catching a few of these fish? You know, I can look at the rods and see they're getting bites. And they're like, well, what am I doing? Obviously not the right thing.
Vintage Cope. Bob, speaking of baits, the green crabs and the notoriously, from my experience anyway, notoriously, you look at them the wrong way and they die. Sort of like peanut bunker or herring. White lagers. One, they're expensive. Two, getting them could be like getting clams, surf clams during a drum season, April, May into June. Bob, white leggers seem to be the choice in the colder water. Greens still catch them. What's the difference? The scent, the meat, what?
They'll catch them on the. We all use whites. Everybody wants whites, so we use whites. I always carry greens on the boat. A lot of the days when if I pick up a rod and fish, I'll just pick up a rod and fish with greens. Just to prove they'll bite the green. You know, I've caught them. I've caught many fish, double-digit fish, in 115 feet of water on green crabs. I mean, that's...
Whoa.
It's a crab. I mean, you know, I think we're to the point in life where we've now made the fish smarter than the angler.
Just the angling, the sheer angling pressure, correct?
Yeah. I mean, everybody overthinks everything, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, it's important if you check your bait, change your bait.
Okay.
You know, if you wind up to check your bait after a few minutes, change it. Don't, it gets washed out. That part is definitely for sure. You go through a lot of bait. I mean, it's not uncommon to go through a bushel and a half of crabs a day with six guys.
And you're, Cope, are you talking a bushel of white leggers?
A bushel and a half, yep.
Oh, man. For me, Tom P., that's getting a second mortgage going on. Bob, on your rigs... Single hook, double hook. I've even seen some tog rigs with three hooks.
Oh.
I know.
The snafu is good. The double hook rigs. Almost everybody fishes two hooks. No matter how they configure them, they fish two hooks.
Bob, hook diameter, hook sharpness, hook design, critical, correct?
Yeah, well, it is. The problem now with hooks, Tom, is every manufacturer makes a 4.0. And every one of them is a different size.
Different size, yeah. Oh.
There's no consistency in what hook is what. I mean, some of these hooks I see, I got some hooks on the boat now I'm fishing are 6.0s, and I got other hooks that are 4.0s, and you'd swear they're the same hook. You know, it's...
About any particular preference brand-wise? Because I know you're a stickler, especially when it comes to what Kopi calls the business end of the setup.
I've got these new Mustad hooks. They're called. They got a couple of new lines. You know, a mutual friend of ours is there now, and they're doing a really good job of revamping everything. And it's the brand, the style I'm using is called Notorious now.
Okay,
that's a new style hook. It's heavy duty. It holds up. And then there's the Dentonado hook, which is all pretty much basically the same kind of hook. A fisherman. And these I use 5.0s because they seem to be a little smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've taken a liking to them. You know, as long as you don't break them off, as long as hooks don't break, they don't bend. You're going to bend some because sometimes you get stuck and you really hang on the rod to get it. You get it free and you bend the hook.
Right.
That's life. It's, you know, nothing's perfect.
Cope, now the meat on the hook. You prefer, for example, a whole small green crab. I've seen guys use the smaller but still pretty big whole white leggers. Pieces, legs off, claws off?
It all depends. Sometimes we cut them in half. Sometimes the little ones, you put two hooks through them, we step on them on the deck and smash them, put them in the water. Sometimes you cut the legs off. We call them the French fries. Sometimes you leave the French fries on. It depends. Sometimes when it gets colder, they start to get those pink, purple, red lips.
Right. Like
red lips, I guess. Well, that's because I think they shed their teeth is what I'm told. And their mouth gets soft. They get soft mouth and they don't want to really eat and chew that hard stuff. So a little trick is we use eating shrimp, regular eating shrimp, and put a piece in the front of the hook.
There you go.
Put the crab on, then put the shrimp on. That'll get them chewing. But it's got to be the cooked shrimp. Orange stuff.
Yeah.
If it's a regular shrimp that's not cooked, they don't eat it.
Right.
I mean, it makes no good sense.
Listen, over the years when I mentioned the shrimp, this Cope right here was the source of that. And I saw it had, I said, whoa. And Cope, that opened up a hole. When the bite's tough, Bobby, sometimes that's been a tiebreaker. Even if it was on the jetty, you know, at Manasquan or Avalon or Barnegat Light, that little piece of shrimp sometimes makes a difference.
Well, because they can eat that. It's soft. They know what it is. I mean, they smell it, I guess. And they start to chew on that, and then they just, you know, take everything else. When you take a bite of steak, next thing you eat the whole steak.
Cope, the future of togging, as you see it, you know, regulations are being changed here and there. You know, you're right in the thick of it there. Tog fishing is, you know, Is this the good old days? Are the good old days way past? I mean, you know, the limit's going to be dropping to four, and then it's closed. One fish here, one fish there. What do you think?
I think it's the good old days are way past us. There's too much pressure with the way we manage fisheries, and it's out of the state's control. It's done by the feds, so let's not blame the state because our state guys do their best. They do what they can for us. You can't manage one thing. If I manage you, there's going to be a lot of yous and nobody else's, and then everybody's going to be screaming. And we can't have that in this world either. But you got to have – there's no way that it's ever going to get any better because they force you to fish for them. But what else can you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's they target you. They direct you with where you're going to fish, basically what you're going to fish for and when you're going to fish for it. So guys want to keep fishing – they got a togfish. You hear that? Because the striped bass here finally showed up inside the line here last week.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's December before they even get here. So what does a guy do, you know, if he's going to go sea bassing down here? It was very good this fall, but it's all 20 fathoms. It's 25 miles off the beach, most of it.
Yep.
The little guy's out. He's out of that game. So what's he have left? He's got tog.
There you go.
You know, they can't keep nothing else, so he goes tog fishing.
Very well said, Cap. Listen, I'm booking you right now, Cope. I'm booking you right now. We're doing a drum special. You got a Delaware Bay drum? You got that, Cope? You're ready? I already have a, what do you call that? I'm Chase's phone. We got it. You're marked on the calendar already for April. What do you think?
April what?
We'll figure something out, Cope, but you're lined in for April drum show. Dealio?
All right, yeah, we just got to do it in the afternoon if we can because I'm fishing. I'm booked every day in April, so unless we get a windy day.
Jesus, man, this would take so long to get Cope. Okay, Bob, listen, you take care, be safe on the water, and a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Thanks again.
Merry Christmas to you, Tom, and all your guys. Take care.
We'll see you, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Tog, that is that winter challenge. That'll do for this week on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. Wow, let's see. We have 5 more days. And in the sixth day, the daylight starts to hang around a little longer. The march to spring will be underway. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio. Get out and enjoy. A lot of stuff going on. Get out. Okay, weather's going to be raining. So what? Later on, that's next week. Go out and do it.